All right, everybody. Hey, it's Joel Radio with you. Joel Fragamenti here. Big show today. I'm excited. This is the show that's been... Has the show been 2 years in the making, in a way, I guess? It's been a year in the making.
A year in the making.
It was a year you were here.
That's right. About a year ago.
But you... 2 years in the making on the book.
Yes.
Something like that.
It's about how long I wrote it, yeah.
Steve Miller's here, everybody. You guys remember Steve from about a year ago, where you were tirelessly working on Juggalo, the insane clown posse in the world they made. And it's out, and we're going to talk about it. Steve's back. I told you this, and I'll tell our listeners, because they don't know, the biggest Joel Radio of all time.
Is that right?
Was you, yeah, last year.
Holy crap.
More downloads than any other show.
Oh, I love hearing that.
Which is great,
okay.
You know.
Right. We must have said something funny.
I guess so. Yeah. It was interesting. I mean, I know you're doing some other interviews and stuff around this book.
Yeah, I've done
at the
couple.
Time, yeah. You know, that was, you know, you probably weren't talking to anybody then.
That's right.
So
you
I
had
was
the
way
exclusive.
Ahead of the curve.
You were.
But we were just more, I think, last time, I mean, I know we talked about Juggalos to some extent, but we talked a lot about rock and roll. We talked about Detroit Rock City.
That's
we
right.
talked about your Bob Becerra book that was coming out.
That's right. And that's right.
And so we
that
were all over the place.
Pre-Becerra. I forgot about that. I was working on two books at
right.
one time. At that
well,
time.
We had a really good conversation driving home from the gathering last year.
That was a nice.
Do you remember
drive.
That? Yeah,
I
that
do.
Was nice.
It was really, really fun.
And so I said, we got to make a show out of that. So
yeah.
That's what it was.
I hitchhiked back. And you picked me up at the side of the highway.
Cool. I will gladly pick up any juggalo by the side of the road, including you.
That poor bastard is hitchhiking home from the gathering.
Oh, man.
Better give him a ride.
So let's get into Juggalo. Now, like I said, 2 years in the making, because I talked to you for the first time 2 years ago. I don't know if that was for the book or if that was just for an online piece.
No, that was I was at the gathering, right?
But was that the beginnings of the book then, or was that just reporting on the gathering?
It was about the start.
Yeah, okay.
No, I knew by then. I knew I was going to do that book.
Yeah.
I knew that March, I think. Is when it sold. So
yeah. So you 2 years, several gatherings.
Took a couple years and a couple gatherings and all kinds of crap.
Lots of interviews, which I was...
Lots of interviews. Yeah.
That's one of the things about the book that's great is that it seems like pretty much everybody talked to you. I mean, was there...
Oh, yeah. You know, that's the one thing you notice right away. Juggalos want to talk.
Yeah.
And they love to talk. And it's like, I think that's really smart. It's always, I don't know. And they're good talkers, too.
Yeah, everyone's got a story.
Yes,
you know,
always.
And... You know, and I was, and this is a book too. You know, if I didn't like this book, you know, probably wouldn't have you on to talk about it to me on, because you know I've read things that you know reporters either that I've talked to or that I know have covered sort of ICP related things, and they come out and then I read their stuff and it's just not accurate or it's just weird and like it has some agenda to it. And I thought this book was, again, like I've said a couple times about, you know, the pieces that I thought have been really fair over the years, this is right up there with them. I mean, this is great.
It's just a tale of, you know, ideally it's a tale of a culture.
Yeah. Now, part of it, I guess, is why maybe I find it so accurate, because I told you some of the things that happened in the book. But,
you
know,
I went with that. Yeah.
When I got the book, and I was very nervous getting the book, to be honest, because I knew we talked.
Sure.
And right before I read it, I said, because we hadn't talked in a while, I gave you some photos, and one of them is in there.
Yeah,
which I got to talk to you about. That. Where's my note on that?
Okay.
I was sort of like the day before I read the book, I said, well, I go, am I really going to be in this book? And I go, nah. I go, I'm not in this book. I knew that I wasn't in the book.
No.
I said, there's no way. It's just it's not about me. It's all this FBI stuff, and I'm irrelevant kind of to the main story. It's interesting, but it's not really for the book. And then I get the book, and first thing you do, what do you think you do if you think you're going to be in a book?
You go through it looking for your
name. Go right
through
the index to see if you're there.
Right through the index is like, where am I?
Sure enough, three pages, Fragamenti, Joel. So I say, oh boy, I'm all right, let's see what happens here.
Yeah.
And I go read it, and it's fine. It's exactly what, you know, I thought it would be. And my greatest dream for it would be what it is. You
yeah,
know?
That's the idea as it presented as it was given to.
Right.
You.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's no shaping it.
And then I'm also in the index as Upchuck the Clown.
That's right.
Yeah.
So you get two identifications. Two
it
IDs.
It's great. Yeah.
It's a cross reference.
I'm happy with that.
Cross reference.
But is that all? Does Shaggy Two Dope and Joe Usler, do they get two?
I don't know.
I don't know. I can look it up.
I did not do the index.
Yeah,
that's,
I know.
That's out of my hand.
Wasn't the index done by a computer anyway nowadays?
I don't know. I don't know how they
I
do
thought
that.
It was.
You know, I'm incredibly far removed from that whole thing.
Okay.
You know, usually I just, you know, once I get the copy going,
yeah,
turn that in. The cover, well, we did have disputes over the cover.
Oh, did you?
What, yeah,
I
which
like,
is kind of interesting.
The cover's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, I love the cover.
Yeah.
But you should have seen what they presented first. And they weren't, get this, they weren't going to use a photo.
I'm oh, like, okay.
Okay, let me get this straight. You got a book about some of the most colorful
You know,
characters around, and you're not going to use a photo. And so we went back and forth, and it came out really
nice. No, the cover's great. I mean, it's definitely got, you know, it's you know, if you were a juggalo, you would want to read this.
Sure.
And if you're not, you know, it's not like a, you know, it looks fun, which it is to a degree, although it's serious too.
Yeah,
you know,
a little of each.
But it's, I think it captures what you're looking for. It captures the spirit of.
Well, you do
the
like
thing,
to,
you know?
Do like to have the non-juggalos read it too. I don't know if they will or not.
Yeah.
But ideally, that would be.
Well, I think I would recommend the book to non-juggalos. I don't say more than juggalos because obviously juggalos are going to care about it.
Yeah.
But I think if juggalos were going to be like, well, it's not really about the music and why didn't he talk about it? And I even read some stuff online where it's like, man, when they revealed the sixth Joker card and it's not even anywhere in the book. And I'm like, well, yeah, I don't know why that, you know.
You know, and that was a conscious effort. Yeah. I wasn't going to go down that road. It just didn't seem to.
Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't seem to fit.
It didn't. Yeah, I understand. It's not the focus of the book. That's a different book.
That is a different
book. It's a different book.
And that's
it's
a
not
real,
what you wrote.
That's right. That's an insider book, too.
Right.
So I don't even know if I could get that by the editors.
Well, it's just maybe somebody else writes that book, not you.
Absolutely.
It doesn't.
That's fine. There's plenty of room.
Yeah, know? Exactly. So let's get right into, I think, my first note. And I think this came right from the intro of the book. A great quote. I'm paraphrasing it, but it really sums it up, especially for a guy like Corey, who's my regular co-host here. It says ICP turns everyone into their dad.
Oh yeah,
that said a lot to me. That was like,
man.
Yeah, that's perfect.
And I'd always noticed that, you know, ever since I really became familiar, it was just people have this visceral reaction. You mentioned ICP, you mentioned Juggalos, and everybody gets really uptight.
Right.
This happened to me, I'll be honest with you, just last night I was having dinner at a friend's restaurant, and somehow, I don't know, independently of me just sitting there, somehow this came up, Juggalos came up, and people were having a discussion at this little bar section that I was... And it was exact same thing happened. They were I've never really heard them, but, you know, I've heard some pretty bad things.
Yeah, you get, like, the hippest, most liberal people, and then they start talking about juggalos, and they're like, oh, fuck them. They should die. Fuck, man? Just eviscerate them. Just get them off the face of the earth. Juggalos.
Yeah,
terrible. The worst thing ever.
Yep.
And it's like, really? That's the thing?
Yeah.
Because a lot of the book, you know, and I guess this goes with your background in punk rock and stuff, is that, you know, juggalos are the last subculture. Culture, or the last, what was the quote in the
absolutely.
Book?
Absolutely, like we're probably the last subculture.
Yeah.
And being, you know, growing up in the punk rock, it really did inform me as I wrote this, because I totally got it. Because, you know, punks, we'd get, you know, halls would be shut down, you can't play here, you're not welcome here, you know, all that kind of stuff we'd get. And it was, you know,
it's definitely, I mean, when you compare juggalos to other things that have drove, like on my notes here, I've got, you know, NWA, which is brought up in the book, and what they went through with their problems with the FBI, Two Live Crew's legal issues.
Mm-hmm.
And when
you
compare it to those, you think back on those and you're like, boy, that didn't hurt anyone.
Right.
Like, we lived through that and we're fine.
That's exactly.
Like, you know, America is still here, you know,
after
hey, we want some pussy or whatever Luther Campbell did.
Right.
You know, like everyone's
we all
still
survived
here.
And, you know,
good.
Morals firmly intact. I'm sure.
Now let's talk just about your background a little bit for those who don't know. I mean, you end up how do you end up writing a book about juggalos? How does that happen?
Accident.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I guess when I got done with Detroit Rock City, the question was, well, what's next?
Yeah.
And I said, well, I don't want to really write another music book. Somebody had they mentioned a couple books on alternative 90s alternative bands. Those would sell.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, they would sell, but that'd be really boring.
Yeah.
And so I just didn't want to tackle anything routine. I didn't want to do anything. I really didn't want to do anything, to be honest with you. And so I thought, well, let's how do we get them off my ass? I thought, I got an idea. I'll propose a book on juggalos.
Yeah.
Nobody will want to buy that. as it turns out, after I did the, you know, I started writing on it, doing some research, and said, well, here's what I want to write about. and I want to write about the FBI thing.
Right, yeah.
And I want to write that. And next thing I know, yeah, sure, we'll do it.
Yeah.
So that was it.
And the story, I think, even since you got involved in it, has gotten more interesting, I think, in that time. I mean, it was a very eventful couple of years, right?
I was really lucky because one of the first things I did, I think, if I remember, is going to one of the court hearings.
Okay.
One of the first court hearings in Detroit where the judge ruled in favor of the Justice Department.
Okay.
And that was a great hearing. It was really interesting. And so I got a chance to talk to the federal attorney, Amy Powell, and that was representing the feds. And then, yeah, it was really that, and then, of course, the ruling out of Cincinnati, remanding the case on appeal back to the original court.
Yeah, and you were there for all that, so that is...
Yeah, I didn't get to Cincinnati. Okay, I listened to the recording about a million times, which is really, really exciting. If you're like a law guy, like I really follow, I love judicial things and the justice system, and that was really exciting stuff. And I just imagine how this is going. You got to remember that this is the Juggalos are suing the feds.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah,
you know, that's what I never really quite get past.
And I take it I don't think you were there. You watched that tape of their announcement.
Yeah,
the seminar, the 1 year where they did that whole thing.
Yeah,
which was I mean, because I was right. You know, I run that stage, so I was right there for that. And that was incredible.
That
the
was
reaction
very emotional.
That they got and stuff, and how it really meant stuff to people. And,
you know,
that was a really great thing.
I watched that several times when they made that announcement.
Yeah, that was a real big deal at the time.
And you noticed they announced it, and then it took a few months for the suit to hit.
Yeah, it was kind of like, a lot of people were like, well, is this something really going to happen here?
Yeah, and nobody understood that it takes time. All these things take a lot of time. But, yeah.
Well, some of the characters in the book, too, you know, that coming out of that, like, Ferris Haddad is a guy that, you know, who I always thought, and again, I like Ferris and I, you know, we don't, like, talk a lot, but when I see him, like, he's a great guy, you know.
He's a great guy.
I talk
really
to him,
and
he's really interesting, and I was sort of like, I was always sort of a little bit with Ferris kind of going, well, this guy's over his head, and this guy doesn't know what he's doing, and I was kind of, I was very skeptical that he was really going to be an asset to them in some way, and that maybe having this like old Juggalo attorney, you know, this kid who was, you know, maybe that's more of a, you know, an anchor than something that was going to be great. But you say Ferris is great.
He's really good. Yeah. He's just part of a very good team.
Yeah, right.
That they had of course they got Miller Canfield involved.
Okay,
and that is a huge. That's a
now is that silk, is that this stocking. Guy because this is. It's towards the end of the book that the attorney, Sara Sahu, really comes off as a hero in this thing. I mean, really, like, of everybody, you're kind of like, this is the one guy that it all goes to him.
Just
that
day in Cincinnati where he hit that home run, evoking what, John Lennon, Kiss, Johnny Cash, and then St. Klompas.
See, him I've never met. You know, it's funny because a lot of the guys in the book, almost all the guys in the book, I know, even a lot of the Juggalos who had problems. And people I know them, and this guy I've never met, so I was like, man, this guy's something else.
Yeah, he really hit a home run in that. So, yeah, from a legal standpoint, it's really, really interesting. But the main point is, the Juggalos are doing a pretty good job in the legal system.
Well, that's good.
Battling the feds. All you really want to do is just kind of try to get that. Really, it's more becoming more of a First Amendment case now.
If there's anything in the book to take away, it's like, yeah, that's exactly what this is. I mean, this is that story.
Yeah.
You know, and you get the background on, you know, what Joe and Joey and how they grew up and the fans and some sort of what they've gone through. But at the end of the day, that's really sort of where we're at right now, 2016.
Yeah.
Like, this is the state of where we're at here.
Yeah, that's right.
And, you know, that will, you know, it is going to be vindication when the whole thing's over, which it seems like. They're peeling back, right? It hasn't been in the gang assessment reports, right?
No, there hasn't been mentions
of Juggalos for years now, right?
No, and I don't know the states. I mean, it's still on the rules, the laws in the book, in the statutes in the states. So you're still subject to enhanced prosecution.
Okay.
But states is a separate thing. That's a separate issue.
It
so
is.
They
yeah,
can
I got
after this if they want to try to get it removed from. State statute.
Well, so that
seems a little more money.
That seems like I was kind of like, well, that's a lot of T-shirts to sell.
That's a lot of
concert
that's
tickets.
Right. That's exactly
that's
right.
A lot of Faygo.
Maybe that's why they've been so busy.
God, they've been so busy, right? I mean, it's just like you know, because as we're recording this, we're like 3 days from the gathering, I guess, and it's like we're both going, and I'm doing my usual hijinks, and Steve's going to be covering it all. And
no, I'll be actually this time. I don't have to write it. The last 2 years, I've covered it for the Daily Beast.
Oh, okay,
not doing that this
okay.
year. Okay, so I thought I'd just go and just hang out,
see what happens. And,
yeah,
but
exactly.
you'll have a notebook with
it's
you.
It's just fun. I will.
Yeah, you're not going to not have a notebook with
you. Yeah, it's just fun though.
Right. Well, and that's not, you know, and one other thing that's great that I think in the book is that, you know, juggalos don't, you know, when juggalos do dumb shit, you call them out on it.
Absolutely.
You know,
and just like everybody else, they do dumb shit. You know?
Like
people do dumb shit.
The juggalos that cut the guy's tattoo off his arm.
Oh, my God.
What the fuck
I
was
love
that?
I thought that's just high stupidity, man. It's great.
It is like the dumbest thing. And the guy's arm was amputated ultimately because of.
Yeah.
You'd think if they were really hard. Let's see. What a bunch of pussy juggalos. You just take a cleaver and cut the fucking arm off.
Right.
You don't cut the tattoo off. Just cut the fucking whole arm off, man.
Which is actually really the way to go. Get it clean. You know, make sure it's clean. You know, yeah, when they do stupid stuff, it's worth noting, I think. But again, that's people do stupid stuff, right?
Well, no one really gets a pass in this book. Like here's one of the things. What your descriptions of people and things. Really, I mean, there are people in this book that, you know, do not get
they might not be
a flattering
right.
description. Well, yeah. Even like, okay, one of my favorite sections of the book, and maybe because I know it intimately, but the description of the psychopathic headquarters is so great. Can I read a little bit of
sure,
it? Can I just,
sure.
just, I mean, I don't want to give away the whole book.
No,
I want
that's fine.
I want people to read the book, but damn it, if I just didn't catch, you know, this, all right. Now, I've been, you know, I've worked in the psychopathic offices. I did radio there for years, and whenever there's something that goes on, I got to go. It says, Psychopathic Records is run as a design freak show where every nuance and color is approved and reconsidered. That doesn't translate to the headquarters. The place is aesthetically benign. The blue shag inside is filthy, and the wall paneling does not make it look like a chalet, but rather a teenager's basement bedroom. Wow.
I got to be honest. That's one of the first things I thought when I walked in for the first time.
Right.
I was like, what? And that was before this book, way before this book.
Right, yeah.
And as I walked in, I'm like, well, who signed off on this?
Well, you know, first of all, I agree with your description.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, to fans, that is like Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory. That is the most amazing, you know, to the outsiders, you know, like you say, like kids are driving by every day.
Yeah.
And it's like, to them, they think, I mean, granted, there's like a million tours of it. If you want to see Psychopathic Headquarters, if you go on YouTube, there's a million tours that they've given over the years to various media people.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, that is the you know, the holy land. In a sense,
this is Mecca for.
And here it is. Here you are describing it that way.
Just, well, no, I didn't mean anything. Again, it just looked. It's very interesting looking. How's that? And I think that was there. I'm pretty sure that was there when they moved in.
Yeah. Well.
Like,
yeah.
You know,
I mean,
even better. It's like, well, fuck it. Just leave it up.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Exactly. They were sort of like, this is it. And you see where that window used to be? Yeah. Put a big giant poster of Violent J, and then put Shaggy next to him, and we'll just, you know.
It's pretty cool in that way.
Yeah, it is. But I also, you know. But if I can ask you a favor, never describe the Jewel Radio headquarters in a book or any written fashion, because I'm afraid of what you would write.
Really?
I'm afraid of what your description would be.
You don't mean the studio that we're
in. Yes, this palatial studio that we now sit in here at Jewel Radio HQ.
Stacks of crap that I don't even know what's in it. Like boxes, cords, wires, DVDs, Star Wars. Oh, is that all
a lot of Star Wars.
There's all the Star Wars? Okay, Star Wars.
Deep Star Wars research.
Stacks of CD, like blank CDs,
sure,
waiting to be burned.
Well, those are already burned with things.
Okay.
Yeah, if you turn around to your right, there's the Abbott and Costello pile. That's right in front of you, sort of on closer to the ground floor.
An enormous thing on the Beatles or whatever.
Beatles, lots of Beatles stuff.
That can't be good.
And then there's a bookshelf of magic books at the top. If you want to know anything about magic,
okay.
It's probably up there.
Some fuzzy dice inexplicably hanging off the shelf.
All right.
There's a dresser full of drugs. Of
well, drugs. There's drugs in there,
I also see pain relief.
Yeah, that's the drugs. Right, that's what I mean. There's no hard drugs in there.
Okay,
I have heartburn medication in there, Steve.
I do. I see a big thing of that.
Yeah,
are you taking that to the gathering with you?
I take all kinds of things to the. You don't even know what I bring.
You get
to the
a lot
gathering.
Of heartburn at the gathering.
I get lots of things at the gathering.
I know what I get. I get vertigo when I go to your tent because that stage is.
Well.
So
God, jeez.
Yeah, anyway.
Well, you know, when you talk about The Gathering and sort of, you know, the current site you missed, and it, I think it, the book covers it well, is, you know, the old site, the Cave and Rock place,
yeah,
was really, that place could be evil. That place really could be a dark, awful, but it could be a wonderful thing, and I had great times there, but that place, there was something about that that really is,
you think, you know. Old biker burial ground or something.
Yeah, and I feel like it's almost like now it should be like, you know, like you should go, they should go reenact The Gathering like it's a Civil War battle or something. Like, we're all going to go to Cave and Rock and we'll dress up like Juggalos and, you know, someone will be Tila Tequila and they'll just recreate that.
For the movie, that would be the place where they shoot the movie.
And, you know, the Tila Tequila incident, which is covered in the book, which I think a lot of people know about, and if you don't look it up.
I'm surprised people have asked me. I've done a couple interviews. They've asked me specifically about that.
Yeah, because that was, but to me, I think.
Good or something. Somebody said, do you think that was okay or something like that? Like, I mean, I don't know. I didn't do it.
Well,
I wasn't there.
In retrospect, to me, as someone who's been, you know, party to this for 14 years and was there when that happened, I think that in a lot of ways was almost like the jump the shark moment for The Gathering. Not that The Gathering sucks now, but it was definitely a thing where when it happened, it would never be the same afterwards, that makes sense.
You make it sound like it was the high point of the
it was the high point, it was the low point, it was a it was all points kind of converged on that field that night.
You know, when I talk to people about it, they'd all get this grim tone.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I was there.
It was dark.
You know?
It was the fall of Saigon in Juggalo form.
But you got to remember, somebody was having fun. Somebody that was throwing crap was having fun.
I don't know.
You know, but...
But you know the footage where there's guys jumping on the skiff of the helicopter and they're escaping the embassy?
Yeah, right.
That's what it was like.
Yeah.
You know, and I was there with, you know, Camille and...
Yeah,
and
you,
some
were on,
we
you were on the carts,
that
right?
was, you know, Tom Green and mm-hmm. that's my crew that night. And, geez, man, that was, you know...
Well, you know, I tried to explain it to somebody else, an interviewer, how it was... whenever you see a mass action, it's really, really scary.
Yeah.
I've been in riots and and it's the same thing.
Yeah.
It's the same, you know, so where you just, the power of the crowd is is overwhelming.
That's
and
exactly,
you really feel
yeah.
a real fear because you think, well, God, if they do this just a little bit in this way,
right.
it's going to affect me and now I'm going to
get
fucked up.
When that happened, and I don't know if I, you know, you wouldn't use this quote in a book because it's secondhand, but I went, you know, when that whole thing ended, and I finally made it backstage, which is where I was sleeping that night. You
right.
know, I was back in a thing, and it was just, I remember I talked to Billy
uh-huh.
Dale, and Billy said, you know, and he was, because he wasn't there, but he's on the radio hearing all these transmissions, and he got back, and I'm describing it to him, and talking to him, and he goes, you know, if they really wanted to do something, we couldn't stop them.
Yeah.
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 And it just said, coming from him, that's pretty profound.
You got that, too. Yeah. You got that. You know, there was something in there that I'd pulled from a tape. I think it was it? I can't remember. Somebody did say something else to that effect.
Yeah,
this is if you could get a political movement with the Juggalos, it would be, you know,
that
formidable.
Was, and you talk in the book about you know, you were at the Black Flag concert and that sort of the similar
the, basis,
the cops
yeah.
came in.
That's right.
And, you know,
it's so true. I mean, there's a lot of similarities to that outlaw kind of thing that was ascribed to punk rockers as there is to Juggalos.
Where they would just, like, come in. But see, the thing is, the cops, I guess it was that, you know, I wasn't there. Was it Toledo or Peoria where the cops came and
right.
a Juggalo punched the horse and all that stuff? And it's like I think the cops like, know enough to stay away at this point.
Man, that's smart copping.
Because, that seems like that would be the worst thing that could have happened, especially, like, with the Tila Tequila thing.
That's right.
Like, cops would not have helped that.
Not at all.
Yeah.
It's just when, and I think we've seen now down at the current site where the gathering is.
Yeah.
Look, its cops have been nothing but cool, right?
Yeah. They've been all right.
Stuff,
yeah.
You know, as I say in the book, I noticed the one cop that told me, he said, this is nothing. This is just fine.
Yeah.
The country shows.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what they have at this place, Legend Valley.
There. Yeah.
And, well, you saw did you see the Pittsburgh thing with, who was the guy? Was it Kenny Chesney?
No.
In
happened?
His concert?
No, what
Well,
happened?
There was like 400 arrests or something,
for
and
God
like violence,
sake.
And like, you know, some guy took photos, and there were like people bloody walking through the streets of Pittsburgh.
It sounds like those guys are gang members.
Yeah, well, it's just like, you know, they all got drunk and started fighting, and it's like, wow. It's a different thing.
Okay, yeah.
All right, so now when you talk about gathering media and what has happened, you know, over the years, because I've seen this, you know, firsthand where... you know, things were happening at the gathering and nobody knew that they were happening. You know, no one was reporting them.
What a missed chance.
Yeah, it was that. And then to me, the history, which goes a little deeper than even you cover in the book, was, you know, there was a movie made by Psychopathic called A Family Underground.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And a lot of things that were captured on tape there sort of became, you know, which would have been one-off organic things that happened. Like, in the years since that was released, now have become the norm for mm-hmm. what, you know, people recreating things that they saw there.
Okay.
And then it sort of went from there to the Vice Report, which was really great. Yeah, that's great.
I loved that guy because he said it was, he compared it to covering the first days of disco. And I mean, this guy, seriously, it's the one great thing about doing this this job that I do anyway, is once in a while you'll talk to somebody that's just so fucking funny.
Yeah.
And you just can't stop laughing. And that guy was killing me.
Here's what's great about that guy, which we probably never talked about this. I was there at the stuff that he was describing in the article. Here's the thing. I never knew that guy was there.
Oh.
That guy was not, because now you see like reporters at the gathering,
sure,
and you know who the fuck they are, and that's no offense to you, but you know,
there's
guys with the camera crews, and there's three guys.
Sure.
This guy was like there. I mean, he just, you know, and now when I think back, I go, okay, that was that guy.
Yeah.
But I was there for, you know, some of those events that he was, and I think I was in one of the photos even, sort of hanging around. Like, he was describing, I think it was a wet t-shirt contest in that, which was like my event to run, you know?
Okay.
And so, and I was like, this guy was just so, like, he just stood back and watched.
And you can tell.
And got this amazing article out of it.
The article was great, and then you can tell the conversation he had with me. He was just, that's exactly... Yeah. It's so reflected.
Yeah, but then all the media became, well, let's get that article for us,
right,
for our publication or our website.
Except I never got the impression that that was what Camille
Well,
was
yeah, I was getting to Camille here eventually because all those people started coming.
Yeah.
Which probably was the reason, you know, Camille, I don't know, it's not the reason she went necessarily, but it was, you know, there was enough media attention before she got there to make it at least like, yeah, I guess we could go cover this. Something
which you'd make,
you might get
to
something
sell,
out of
sell
it.
Sell to your editor, you know, is what you're trying to do.
And she got more out of it than I think even she thought.
I think
by going there.
Yeah, she had a great approach to it.
Yeah. So if you want to read, you know, if you read her Village Voice stuff,
it's fantastic.
That initial article she did was so great.
Yeah, and, it really is. It
you know,
really
I spent a lot of time with her and talked to her a lot that year because I could tell she was not some of these other people that go that just want to, you know, show how drunk people are or. Boy, these guys were doing bong hits out of a, you know.
I noticed that early on as I did my own reporting, is people were really into the sensationalism.
Yeah.
And I mean, you went to a concert and people were doing bong hits? Mm-hmm. Boy, how about that?
Yeah, exactly.
You know
and yeah, you'll see stuff that you don't see. You know, it's different, but it's at the same time, it's not different than, you know, heavy metal shows, country shows now where you see people getting ridiculously, you know, it's a different, it looks different. But at the base, it's just, you know, I mean, if you go to Electric Forest, say, the EDM festival, Northern Michigan.
Okay.
Are people less stoned than the gathering? I don't think so.
I'm kind of doubt it.
I've never been
it.
There, but
yeah,
I've been
neither.
To other, you know, I've been to European music festivals. I've been to Glastonbury. I've been to Reading.
Yeah.
Same shit.
Yeah.
Same shit. You know, and I think the first year I did the gathering, I remember talking to Rob Bruce and going, you know, I've been to festivals in Europe and, you know, you've kind of got that vibe here. You know, it sort of feels like that on some level.
Okay.
And I just think that the gathering it gets sort of unfairly treated when it's like, well, you could go to any of these and cover that. Instead, you're covering the X. That's the thing. People go to the gathering and, you know, the guys on stage, no one really cares about. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like if you went to Coachella, you would talk about, well, then this band came on, and
yeah,
then
you would.
This band came on, and these guys did this great set and stuff. And people go to the gathering. It's like they don't even fucking talk about who's there. I mean, you see pictures from ICP set.
Right.
Well, that's not the thing, you know?
The bands are part of the fabric of the whole thing. That's why it's the gathering. It's not some sort of, you know, a festival featuring so-and-so and so-and-so.
And then, okay, let's get into...
It seems more cultural. It's almost like it's more just as cultural as it is musical.
I think so. Yeah, but I just think that when people cover it, they don't ever think to look at that part. Like, look at the fans. Like, look at what they're doing. Instead, everybody's sort of looking at the bright lights of the stage and not looking at what other things. I mean, I've seen documentaries and stuff about, you know, deadheads and those kind of people and fishheads and their lifestyle. But never, you know, like to the point of, like, go follow country fans as they get drunk in their pickup trucks before the show.
Oh, just imagine that.
Yeah, that
just imagine that tailgating.
And that would frighten people too. People would go, like, if people saw like a documentary about that Kenny Chesney thing in Pittsburgh, they'd be like, we're not having fucking Kenny Chesney here in this town.
Yeah.
We're shutting this down, man. You can't have this.
The city council were banning.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. But then again, they go, "Well, wait a minute." And then somebody goes up and says, "We'll give you $10,000 if you'll allow him to." Oh, okay. Well, because everybody makes money, right?
Come down to that, though.
Yes, it does. Everybody makes money with Kenny Chesney.
All right, let's talk about me, because that's why everyone's listening. No, I'm kidding.
That's exactly. They were tuned in.
So as I talk about in the book, you know, there's a little section about me. Your description of me was great.
Yes, okay.
I love you. I'll let people read that.
All
I don't want to ruin
okay.
that, because I feel like my fans, anyway, might get the book just to read that.
Yeah.
But I felt my you know, because I'm just kind of like, as you're describing all these characters, I'm like, oh, boy, when he gets to me, what's it going to be? What's it going to
sound flattered
like?
By being described as a genius?
Well, I'm not described as a genius, but it was fair.
All right.
You know? Yeah. And the stories I told you about the comics, which I think is pretty
funny. They were funny, good stories,
and,
too.
You know? Although, one beef... No mention of Robin Williams when the Bobcat does that story.
No, you know.
Yeah, I know.
I know you'd like to think that, you know,
I would
Robin
like
was
that
right
in print.
There
yeah.
And he, yeah. Okay, you good. Put that in now, let everybody know that he was on the show.
It's, yeah, he was on, when you see the Bobcat story, which I've told, I have it. I could play it right now, the Bobcat story. It's on, the, you know, I played it on this show many times.
I'm sure.
From Harmontown. But yeah, Robin was there doing his upchuck. Impression on the scene.
Yeah,
so,
sorry. Yeah,
I was flattered by that, and it would be nice if you could spread the word there. But again, that probably takes the story to a different place now that Robin's dead, and you know,
you got to streamline these things sometimes when you're.
So
writing.
That was that was a little beef, and then the other when you were looking for photos.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking for photos, and I go, okay, I got some photos. I'll send them to you.
Right.
We exchange some emails, and you said to me, you say, Joel. You said, well, how do I credit you in the photos?
Right.
And I said, I don't fucking know. So I wrote like a funny photo credit.
Okay.
Which is exactly what's in the.
Right.
Like, okay, so this guy's like, you know, photo by Fagolovers.net, photo by Curtis Bolt, courtesy of Danielle Keene. And then my photo, which is of Lake Hepatitis, the infamous Lakes, from the personal collection of Joel Fragamenti, the most pompous fucking. And because I wrote that to you as a joke.
And you know,
and
what
of course,
I liked
it's
about
literally
it,
word
what
for
I,
word.
What
and
I really
like,
wanted people to go, God, I'd love to see the rest of the personal collection.
It is a collection, but it's like, God, I come off of sounding like such a, you know, such a douche.
I love
my
it.
Personal
I thought,
collection.
I thought it was perfect.
A photo. Okay.
Again, we all want to see the rest of the collection.
Well, are you
that's
seeing
a nice
some
shot
of it?
Of Lake Hepatitis.
Yeah, that was a good shot of Lake Hepatitis, which actually looks quite pleasant.
It does. I just want to take.
I
a
never
dip.
Swam in it, but it is quite pleasant.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You know, I have video now. It's on a format that I wouldn't even be able to play back currently, of like the first gathering I ever went to,
which was
2003.
Okay,
and you know it was the first. It was the Nelson Ledges. It was the first outdoor one.
Mm-hmm.
If you saw that, just based on my memory, that's some incredible stuff. That like. People would love to see that.
Do you have photos? Or
no, it's video.
Video? Oh,
it's like
God, you got to bring that
digital
out.
8 or some format that like I think my camera doesn't even work. But I should try to find that because that would be interesting to people. And I say that because there was a lake at that thing. You know, it was a quarry park,
right?
And it was this lake. But one thing I noticed, you know, when I think about it, and I probably have the video somewhere. I might have it on a computer, but it might be on an old computer or something. It you
right
pointing
there.
At a burned? Yeah, there
it?
Could be
that disc right there.
It, you know, strange. there's some dusty DVDs there.
Shit, yeah.
That
yeah.
That's a lot of instructional magic DVDs, Steve. Just for the record.
Oh,
but
is.
Anyway, let's move on. But this footage, you know, I think the event looks different. That's the one thing that I've noticed. You know, people used to go to the gathering and they would just be like, you know, like one guy would just dress up as Winnie the Pooh and that was like his thing.
Okay.
And like people would just go like however they. And now it's all like it's all merch and it's all. Dreads and it's that people are not as individual as they used to be. I find it.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Which I know people are in. You know how it's like
it's getting gentrified.
You know, well,
getting
here's the thing. Okay, like they take like you're a punk rocker or somebody. You're a goth. Let's say you're a goth.
Okay. All right.
And you're a goth and like nobody looks like you, man. You're a goth. You stand out. You go somewhere, nobody looks like you. Then you go to some goth concert and every fucking guy looks the same.
Okay.
it's sort of, The Gathering is sort of that now. Whereas back in the day, everyone was different, and when they got together, it was more of this collection of different people, versus now where everybody sort of has more of a similar thing going on.
Or maybe they're getting older and they realize the real, the most important difference is in the head.
Well, but I feel like it's become a uniform in a sense.
I see. Okay.
So sort of, you know, the look of the Juggalo has evolved to its current state.
Maybe the look just isn't as important. Maybe,
well, that there might be that something to that, but I think that's something that I've noticed in 14 years or 13 years doing this.
Sure.
It's like, yeah, this is, things are, like, everybody's kind of converging on something.
Okay.
On a prototype of a Juggalo. Whereas in the past, it was all these kind of different, it's weird. Maybe wow. I think only you have that thing. That will be in my book about The Gathering.
again, my speculation is people are realizing it's not as important to look as it is to think.
Yeah, but I feel like it was more different people from different walks of life coming together and sort of saying, oh, we're all Juggalos versus now being, you're now, you know what I mean? It was different misfits that became Juggalos versus now you're just a Juggalo.
And there you
straight
are,
up, like you just go, I'm a Juggalo. Give me this shit. I'm gonna put it on. I'm gonna paint my face this way. Whereas before, it was like, well, I'm kind of a nerd and I don't really get along with people. Or guys would be, I'm a metalhead and I don't get along with people. Oh, I should be a Juggalo. You know what I mean? Like, there's a difference there.
Yeah, I don't know the thought process there, but I do know that last year, between even just in 1 year, where I go, well, there's some people here this year. This is last year.
Yeah.
That first timers. You could tell.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And
right.
They
yeah.
Weren't, they weren't fully, like, you know, fully, Juggalos or whatever. They were just there because we heard this is cool and we want to check it out. They
and that's good.
Open minds.
And I know the attendance was up somewhat last year from it was. Because the first year in that new park, you know, in Thornville, I think it was way down. I mean, I don't know.
Okay. Well, that's to be expected.
You would know but more than I do, I think, the numbers and stuff.
But that's to be expected. But
But
and last year, definitely,
It picked up from year on year, but it's still down from whatever its height was.
Right.
Whatever that year in Cave and Rock was when,
that was
maybe it might have been the Charlie Sheen year, which was talked about in the book, where you bring that up.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
You know, what's funny about Charlie Sheen, and I told the story on the show before, but, you know, Charlie, so the story comes out about Charlie Sheen's HIV positive, you know.
Right.
So I was always, when I saw Charlie, my description, people like, you know, I got to work with Charlie Sheen, and I said hi to him, and we talked for a minute, and I was like, and they're like, what'd you think of him? I go, well, he looked like, you know, I was wrong, but I was like, he looked like a crackhead. The guy looked like he wasn't well, he wasn't this. Turns out he just had HIV. That, you know, stupid me. Who am I to judge on first glances?
Well, maybe he didn't even know it then, but
well,
he
you
could
know
be
what?
A doctor.
I went back.
Dude,
I went back.
Well. You could just tell him.
When he told, when he gave his, like, Matt Lauer interview and stuff, and, you know, I counted back to when, he would have found out, based upon, like, my research, like, a month before he did The Gathering.
Dude.
Yeah.
So you could be a doctor. How do I look? I'm all right?
You look great.
Okay,
you look
thanks,
perfect.
Thanks.
Yeah, you look
shit,
perfect.
Shit, man.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think you might want to do something, like, at The Gathering, just after, just, if you want to know how you're doing, walk
yeah,
up and just,
I,
Joel
you know,
will tell you.
Well, but the thing with Charlie, he was so going crazy, and he was so in the center of American pop culture at that moment that I was like, well, this guy's just been partying hard. He's been living
he's
large.
Riding a wave.
But he clearly, I think that explains a lot of what was going on with him, like where his head was.
Wow.
If you just think about it, just in general, with what, forget about the stuff at The Gathering, but just the other stuff, it's like, well, the guy just found out he's got AIDS. He's fucking going crazy
because
he's going to die. And
he's
regretting his lifestyle for the last, you know.
Well, thank goodness he's got a lot of money so he can take all,
I
the,
guess.
All the, you know, get the treatment he needs.
I don't know. I don't know how much, figure out how much they gave him for that?
No,
did that ever come up in anything?
I wanted, you know, there was some speculation.
George would probably know.
That it was
somebody
close
in Velocus,
to six figures. There was some sort of thing. But I don't think that's true. I mean, I'm positive that's not true. But somebody wanted to try to tell me that.
It was,
I said, come on. Get out of here. And that's when I stopped.
The scuttlebutt at the time was that Charlie just wanted to do it because he knew it was an outlaw thing. And he was the number one outlaw. So why he should be seen at this...
Can't fault that reasoning,
crazy
right?
outlaw event.
Sure.
I
bet they gave him $5,000.
He might have been there 4 hours, if that.
I bet they.
He might have been there.
That's crazy.
From the minute he rolled up to the minute he left, if 4 hours went off the clock, I would be surprised. But it was something. Hey, man, I was there.
It's a spectacle.
I was there for that, man.
You know, that's
was in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Cool. Let's talk about some other people. The Juggalo preacher on the Navy ship.
I love that.
Juggaloism as a religion. Yeah. Explain that.
The guy's in the military, and this is like really kind of interesting. He's in the military. He's a Juggalo, and he's on a ship, and so he actually formed a religion, yeah. And the email he sends out an email to his to the people that are on the ship that are Juggalos and going to the service, and he accidentally CCs the whole administration, the leadership of the ship and so on, including the commanding officer. And so they flip out. They're like, what is this? What's going on?
Yeah.
We've got some sort of cult here. What is this Juggaloism? And they wanted to get to the bottom of it.
Yeah.
And of course, as they did, once they found out, they said, wait a minute. They said, this is a religion.
Yeah.
And so it's the military. They're like, hands off.
Yeah,
we're backing off, man. Because
I met a guy at the gathering, and I don't know if it was this guy, but it was like his dog tag. You know how your dog tag has your faith on it?
Yeah.
A guy had Juggaloism on his dog tag.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't know if it was that, if it was that guy.
I'm sure there's...
But I'm like, wow, this guy just can do that. And he said, I think he was on leave to go to the gathering because he said the gathering was his religious holiday.
Imagine what you can get away with, you know. But I love that thinking. This guy on this ship, he's current enlisted, and there he is, you know, holding services,
which is great, you know. Sure. It's tremendous, but it's also like kind of his workaround to still be part of the Juggalo thing while being stuck in the Navy, which is very uniform and
the guy is a legitimate chaplain. Too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, I had lunch with him. He had his his little outfit on and stuff like that. I was like, all right.
And then some other kind of legal stuff in here. Salt Lake City, first place to really go after Juggalos as a gang.
Pretty much.
Which is not surprising when you figure
Salt Lake City, there's not much going on.
Most conservative town
in
America.
You probably don't have a whole lot of crime anyway.
Yeah.
And you can create some outlaws. Ugh. Boy, you get some grants. That's a great way to get grant money. We've got a terrible Juggalo problem, which sounds just funny even saying it. And so, it's a good way to get some grants.
Well, that's one of the things that I really opened my eyes in the book was how much money is given to these people to do these gang reports and the guys who do the gang lectures, and they go out and they lecture to law enforcement and they're paid.
They're spending public money.
Incredible
on this
sums
stuff.
Of money. Yeah, like tax money is going to this.
To Juggalos, to give these presidents. Yeah, it's.
And it's like a lot of other things when you realize people get government money and people can attack them for it. You almost go like, it's become an industry.
Yeah.
To labeled people as Juggalos.
That's
and,
right.
And go like, I forget the guy's name, but it's like his job to go lecture on.
They had several of these people giving lectures, traveling.
Yeah.
One guy told me, one cop said, it was great because, I was giving these lectures. He says, then the grant money started running out, so I couldn't do it as much anymore. I'm heartbroken.
Yeah. He has this important job that, I guess I can't do that anymore.
Right.
That's, it's not in the public good or anything. It's just because they're not lying in your pockets anymore.
Yeah, there's a guy down in Texas with the attorney general's office doing the same thing. And, they fought me. I was trying to get records on, where did he give these lectures?
Right.
How much was he paid? They fought me. I filed open records requests.
Okay.
They fought me on a lot of that. And I had to appeal, and I did get some more records after I appealed.
Yeah.
They didn't really care for people to know.
Well, that's and that seems to be the world we live in now, where stuff is, buried somewhere, and then everyone's got to file these Freedom of Information Act
stuff.
Which
is good. I mean, everybody should file Freedom of Information Act stuff, but they do want to make you fight for it. And there's other departments that wanted to charge me, $500, $1,000 for stuff. I said, it's not that important, but it just tells me something that you're trying to charge me.
How do they justify the charge? Like administrative costs? Somebody's got to make copies?
That's
stuff.
A whole different issue.
Yeah.
But it happens in all kinds of open records filings. I get it all the time.
Wow.
But these were places, Albuquerque, New Mexico, really just simply would not give it up.
Okay.
And, as we know, that's a popular Juggalo town.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
But it's a bad town for law enforcement, too.
Sure.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, people have described Albuquerque, aside from Juggalos, like, There's like a sense of evil in Albuquerque. I've heard it described that way.
You know, I've
just something
that
about that. I've never
that?
Been there.
It's
is it
not,
like that?
Yeah, I've been there, and it's not pleasant.
Yeah.
And out here, we're beating up on Albuquerque. This is,
well, we're
this
in
is
Detroit, good. So we're, yeah. we're beating up on Albuquerque.
That's right.
You know, we're in Detroit, so hey, if we can kick on, we can kick somebody
anybody,
lower than us.
Yeah,
there you go,
Albuquerque. Yeah, there you
take
go.
That.
Sure, sure. But yeah,
come
it does have
us.
Kind of a strange.
Yeah, that's what
there.
I've heard from people yeah. who are there. And I guess isn't Breaking Bad's there, right? So that's got that.
That's good.
That sort of drug like.
Maybe
people...
it's one of the positive attributes.
Well, it got him some publicity, but it's like, hey, we're known for
well,
meth
Breaking
now.
Breaking Bad is a positive attribute yeah. of Albuquerque.
But we're here in Ferndale, Michigan. Did you see the big? There's a big
here.
Rock fest going on two blocks away. Did you know that
today?
Yeah.
Who's playing?
I don't know. Electric Six was there the other night.
Yeah, I heard. I knew yeah. Electric Six was playing. Was that Friday night?
Yeah, I think it was Friday night.
Okay.
It's still going on now. It's oh. very cool. That's where we live. Where I live here.
Well, let's go.
It's a. We can go
Rock
after
fest.
This.
Let's
all right.
Go.
All right. We'll see you later, guys. We're gonna go. I got. Yeah. I got more questions. I got.
Oh,
more questions.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Serious questions, please. Only serious questions about Juggalos. All right. Ones. I didn't know about Daniel Shellhammer.
You know,
that's a great story.
Again,
I did not know.
Surprise to me.
I didn't
too.
Know that that resolved its way. And boy, that's like
fucking pissed me off. And that's way back.
Describe what happened to him.
Daniel Shellhammer is 14 years old at the time, I believe, walking down the street in some little Ohio town, suburban Toledo, and he had on an ICP T-shirt. I think it was Merry. What was it? Was it Merry Christmas, bitch?
Yeah, it's in the book, yeah. It's
yeah,
like
and he was just wearing, you know, one of those, and him and his buddy going to the store. Remember, this is a kid's, he's 14, 15
yeah,
years
right.
old. The cops come up, two cops, they come up and they say, you got to take that shirt off.
Yeah.
And he's, and of course, he's a kid. He doesn't know any better. The
right.
cops tell you, he takes it off.
Yeah.
And, so he gets home and the kid's mom finds out.
Mm-hmm.
And his grandma finds out, and they raise hell, and they contact the ACLU, and it escalates from there to the point where they sued him. They had to settle, and just one more incident
yeah.
in wasting the taxpayers'
right.
money
and
because these two cops didn't even know what a First Amendment.
Right,
was.
He says he got $4,500 in the settlement.
$4,500 yeah. yeah,
that's. You know,
I mean,
but that should show people like these other like that should set precedent, shouldn't it?
It should you would
where
think.
People would go like, yeah, you can't. I mean, I know a settlement isn't precedent like a legal ruling, but it's still like
just two cops trying to bully a kid that doesn't who of course doesn't know what a First Amendment right is, and you know. What are you going to do? I mean, I guess if it happened to you, what did you do? You fuck you. I'm going to keep wearing my shirt. Well, then what are they going to do? Are they gonna
and if he never fights it,
yeah.
then the cops just get away with what
they
did.
Just get away
and
with, exactly.
Nothing
and
ever
so
changes.
He's really inadvertently quite the hero.
Yeah, he was sort of
but
the first, he fired the first shot in a
right.
sense. Whatever.
Right, yeah.
Who's the guy who fired the first shot in the revolution? What's that? I don't know.
But we don't
know American history that well between the two of us.
I'm surprised you don't have a history book.
I can tell you about the history of Abbott and Costello or
first
Bruce Springsteen.
The first
yeah.
Beatles
concert,
yeah.
man. First time
okay,
the Beatles recorded was in 1960.
But who fired the first shot
yeah,
in the revolution?
We don't know. But Daniel Shellhammer.
Daniel Shellhammer.
Whoever, he's got to be 30 years old now or something,
that's right.
right?
You
yeah.
know, I contacted him.
Oh, really? Okay.
Too late. And in fact, I contacted him via Facebook. And after the book went out, after the book went to press, he reached out. And he said, I heard you were trying to contact him.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I just said, you know, you did a great job on that.
Right, yeah.
You know,
that's amazing.
Up,
yeah. But it's too bad that's sort of, that's one of the great things of the book is that, you know, that's not forgotten now.
Yes.
Anyone
right.
that wants to read that can see this, like, history of
that's right.
the mistreatment of Juggalos and stuff.
Yeah.
And that.
Yeah, I did, you know, for that part of it, I did reach out to the guy from the ACLU and he
yeah.
remembered the case.
Okay, yeah, good. You talked to Faygo.
Faygo.
Because I've always thought that Faygo wants to be more than arm's length from ICP. They don't want to have anything to do with them, and yet they talk to you on the record, which
yeah,
is interesting.
Yeah, yeah. He was the reason I got this guy, he was filing a lawsuit. He was one of the original family members of Faygo, and he was filing a lawsuit, age discrimination. And so I figured, well, this guy's
oh, okay, so he's got a beef.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah
got
okay.
Beef.
All
and
right.
he just, what he told me, the simple part of it was they'd had meetings about it.
Okay.
Should we?
Yeah,
you know, should we team up with this ICP?
Right.
The meetings, everybody decided, nah.
Well, that seems like kind of an old guard kind of
yeah, it does.
Move. Like, it doesn't seem yeah. like it's modern yeah. with, like, you know, no one's going to stop buying Faygo.
Because of that, no,
you're only going to sell more. And I guess they're happy with what they're selling. You know, I mean, I think they realize that ICP helps them.
I guess we're not marketing pros, but I suppose the thing would be, well, we're doing fine without it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, we'll get there.
And
you
we're
know.
Getting advertising inadvertently yeah. from them anyway.
Yeah. And so, then when they order their trucks and trucks of this stuff.
When they
too.
Show up, loading up the pallets, I guess, they're figuring they're doing just fine.
That's something for people that don't get the Faygo thing, who like, you know, if you grew up in Michigan, it's really not, there's nothing about it that's special. And I think that some people don't get that. Like, people think that it's somehow this weird beverage or
they
something.
They do. You're right. You see it characterized in outside Michigan and people that didn't grow up with it.
Yeah.
It's a cut-rate, sticky soda.
Right, like it's the Spam of soda or something. And it's
and
like,
I mean, I came from a middle-class background, and we had it in the house, of course.
Yeah, every kid drank Red Pop in the summer.
Faygo Red, man.
Yeah.
It was good, and you grew up with it and just...
And so for them to use it is funny, but it's also not like weird to think of two guys from Detroit...
There was no cultural reflection.
Yeah, it just didn't, you know. Because wasn't that in the first, they talked about Faygo before they ever used it on stage, right? Wasn't there something in there in one of the albums?
It was in one of the songs, in one of the early songs.
There's a lyric about Faygo
before,
because the story that, as I know it, which I think was in Violent J's book about.
Yeah, behind
the first time that Faygo was used on stage, they had some just to keep cool.
Right.
At the Magic Bag, right over around the corner from me, at the Magic Bag, and
that's
they're
right.
playing there, and Joe threw one at Joey or something, just to, you know, or somebody dropped one, and it went out in the crowd.
People went nuts.
And people went crazy, and then it just became the thing of, like, that's
but it was, as I say, it was a cultural touch point in one of the lyrics in one of the early songs.
Yeah.
And so, I guess, you know, just making that reference, like you'd make reference to anything, you know.
But they probably weren't thinking, like, this is something.
Right.
You know, they just stumbled over it. There was no, I mean, I guess later there was the decision, we're going to make this the centerpiece of our live show and stuff. But at the time, it was completely organic. It was an accident, essentially.
That's right.
That why Faygo, you know, if they had a Mountain Dew on stage, we might be all throwing Mountain Dew on kids. You know, if you think about it, you know that,
Pepsi would probably be more likely to play ball with them marketing.
At this point.
Yeah.
If they want to make some cash, man, just go, look, man, we'll throw Red Bull. Just fucking give us some money. Let's go. Just do it.
God. That'd be an interesting one.
Well, look,
Red Bull all over the
ICP could have sold out. I'm sure they've gotten offers over the years to do stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure of that.
That they don't do?
I have a hard time believing that at the gathering there would not be a corporate entity that would want to be there.
In some way, shape, or form. Somebody would
really...
Monster Energy, is that in the book? Or
yes, Monster, they was like, they'd do it. They would,
absolutely.
If Monster came to them, they'd do it. And I thought, well, that makes sense.
And but I think nowadays, you know, we grew up sort of with this DIY sort of anti-establishment thing. We're older. But now I think younger people wouldn't even care about that. They wouldn't even bat an eyelash.
I guess they don't.
At
but
corporate
it's still,
sponsorship.
I still find it. I mean, a McDonald's desk or a McDonald's tent at South by Southwest.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. Still, I guess, maybe you're right. Maybe it's because you're older. And you kind of bristle a little bit when you see it,
right?
Probably because the pernicious realities of some of these corporations and how they fuck everybody. But you're right. I think now could have an AT&T table there, and
I think it would be the ultimate fuck you or it would be a victory for them to open their gates and have every fucking thing sponsored by every stage, sponsored by by Verizon, and just be like, look, the corporate world came to us, man. We're running them. We're taking their money and we're doing, you know, we're taking their money and we're running a fucking wet t-shirt contest on their stage
with
the Sprint logo behind it. And that's, you know,
they're so it's now been very established that no corporation wanted to have anything to do with psychopathic.
Yeah.
Now, to do it now would be the ultimate.
Yeah, now it's like if they would do it. And look, it's not going to happen, but
it's not gonna happen.
Boy, if they did it, I mean, hell, they'd have some money. They certainly, you know, and God knows they need the money. I mean, that is a thing. And look, am I talking a little bit out of school here? I guess I am.
Yes,
but it's in the book about, you know, the staff is down to seven members, which I think are all profiled in the book, by the way, which was great because I know all those guys. And those really... That's one thing that I loved was the profile of those guys.
Well, I thought the thinking on that was too. You get to look at I've dealt with a lot of indie labels mm-hmm. over the years, and I've always been fascinated by how is an indie label run and how do you run an organization like that. So again, I thought, well, if I'm reading this, I'd like to know.
Yeah, where do these guys come from?
What do they do
to end up there? Like Dean is such an interesting story.
What
his background.
Character. Yeah,
I mean Will Sigler. Sure.
Yes,
Will Sigler's like.
Yeah, what
that guy's amazing.
Guy.
Like,
he really is.
When I met Will Sigler, I thought he was like a con or something. I thought he was like a phony. No, I really did, and I say this as a very good friend of Will.
Sure,
I thought he was full of shit. I thought he was trying almost. I'm like, well, there's some angle where he just wants to sort of ingratiate himself and be part of this. Like,
yeah.
It's a little bit of, you know, I'm kissing ass to these guys who I'm a big fan of.
Right.
And then you realize what he does, and, like, he travels every day
to
the office.
Make that drive.
And when you see him at the gathering and all the stuff he does, this guy's, like, just an amazing, he's a genuine, real guy that is unbelievable. He's an unbelievable character. He's so great.
And you don't see that in other elements of entertainment. You just don't see it. So that's why when you read this, you say, this is kind of unique.
Kuma.
It's kind of a unique Kuma.
I'll give Kuma some credit. That guy, people don't even know what he does. You know, they have no idea what Kuma does for that company.
I'll tell you a really funny story. So one day I go out. I'm down there. I can't remember. I'm doing some interviews or something. I'm at Psychopathic. And they go, it's like Kuma and I think Dean and Rob. And, hey, we're going to go out to lunch.
Yeah.
And so we all go out. And I say, you want to go? I say, yeah, sure. I'll go to lunch. So we go to this little diner nearby. And it's like 6-7 guys sitting down at a big table. And I don't know what. So we're all sitting down. So we order. And like 3 or 4 guys get their food first. And there's 3 guys without their food sitting there. And I didn't have my, I was one of the guys that didn't have his food.
Yeah.
And I'm looking, and these guys, out of their manners, they did not pick up and start eating.
Look at that.
That's the weirdest shit I ever saw in my life. I'm like, what's wrong with these freaks?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, these are, we're dudes. You just dig in.
Go for it, man.
And nope. It was total, I didn't understand.
That's great.
It.
Well, that's great. But anyway, those guys.
So I thought these are different. Different kind of people.
Yeah, it is the psychopathic crew and sort of those people. They're different, but they're great.
Older
you know, they're great. And if they weren't great, it wouldn't be what it is because you couldn't do that with.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And there's been bad people, and certainly there's. And I think there's less of. I thought I was a little bit surprised in the book that there wasn't. I think there's people with axes to grind, no pun intended, with psychopathic, but they're not really in the book.
Well,
if you know what I mean, you know, like the guys who've left the label or were angry.
Absolutely.
And some of them are in the book, but it's never in a real negative
light. Right. I suppose it didn't make sense. I thought Andy Pellegrini's lawsuit, I thought that was rough.
That's a big enough story that it has to be in there.
Well, too, that's part of it, too.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have talked to her because I thought that she had some.
Well, I didn't realize they settled it until I read your book.
Yeah.
Because I was sort of like, where is that at and where is that going and that whole thing?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, it's been settled. Well, then I guess they're just moving on. And
you got to, too, in any business, there's going to be beefs. And you can, and so there's always going to be gripes. Some are legitimate, some aren't.
Yeah,
and the way I thought is if I start going down that rabbit hole,
It would be
we're going to take up
if you wanted to do the anti
who's angry
if you want to do the unauthorized ICP story and
who's angry that kind of thing.
You would have a book twice the size of yours with guys going and fuck these guys
it would be a lot of
I wouldn't be in that book.
Yeah.
and again, like people have said, and I've even talked to Joe Bruce about this, Violent J, and he said you know you could trash us. He said that to me. He says, you could trash us whenever you want. You've got, And I go, and he goes, you never do. And I said, well, I'm pretty honest about, my stuff. I don't,
It is remarkable, too, and I don't know if they knew. I mean, they have no, they aren't having people sign non-disclosure agreements.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Which, I mean, I don't know about you, but when I write for people, I oftentimes they'll try to get a non-disclosure agreement in my employment contract.
Yeah, because I was listening to this podcast the other day, and one of the wrestlers got fired for some reason, and he just did this whole fucking trashed everything. You know, he went on a show and just trashed everybody and all these guys that come out of the woodwork.
Hey, anytime you get let go from someplace, don't you want to trash
and it's
the
just
place?
Like everybody just trashes. And it's like this collective pile of them being trashed. It's like, you know, it's not bad enough that the mainstream media is dumping on ICP. And it's like, then you've got these guys who've worked for the company for years.
Disenfranchised
who have
employees.
Some money thing, and then they're like, well, fuck these guys, man, and the fucking shit, and all these stories. I mean, even Andy Pellegrini's lawsuit. I mean, if you read that lawsuit and you go, this is just to trash people. There's language in that lawsuit that is there that has absolutely nothing to do with anything that she was treated. It has nothing to do with anything she was involved in.
And, you know, it's really interesting. It was so well written.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you could probably take some cues from that if you ever have to sue somebody. and I think people like should take note of that because that's a great way to get in your beefs.
Yeah.
And you put it in a
Yeah, I guess you can put anything in a legal brief, right?
I mean, just saw, you know, we get a, you know, Gretchen Carlson suing Roger Ailes. His response was her complaint was defamatory in nature.
Okay.
And so we're getting into some legal talk here.
I think what happened to them in that thing.
I think.
Because there's stuff in there that's like, I know what her complaint is.
Sure.
And I think I would side with her in her.
Right.
Was she harassed by this one particular fella at Psychopathic? I think she was.
Okay.
I would agree with that.
Okay.
I know both parties. I knew the guy who she was accusing of these things.
Yeah.
And I think I told you this for the book. I go, I wasn't. Am I shocked by it? No.
Yeah.
It's sad that it happened. I kind of liked that guy, but when you tell me he did that, I go, okay.
Okay.
But the stuff about, you know, Violent J and his wife and their relationship and stuff, I'm like, what the
Throwing
fuck
that
is
stuff
this?
In. Yeah.
What are it you was, doing?
Yeah.
What well, if, you know, it's just, well, yeah, it's unbelievable.
It's the nature of the game.
Yeah. Well it makes me, you know, I sympathize with them in that way. You know, having all that stuff
you're
dumped on them.
Well, you're a target.
Yeah. And, you know, look, I've been, in my own way, a target of, people that there's people like in comedy that don't understand what I do there and why I do that and the fact that I enjoy it, people don't get. Yeah. And so they sort of they find pot shots to take at me about that. And I go, well, I don't know why. I mean, it's like,
well, what's that saying? You know, where there's a hit, there's a writ. when you become popular enough,
I've always been like, and I like that ICP is like this, and they, you know, they both talk to you, Rob talked to you, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody,
sure,
even Billy talked. Billy never talked to anybody, and Billy talked to you.
I heard that.
Billy never. That is the thing. Like,
he's a man of few words.
He really is. Yeah. I mean, I've known Billy for 14 years, and
yeah. I enjoy it.
I've talked to you. You know, we've hung out four times, five times. I've talked more to you than I've talked to Billy Bill in 14 years.
But, all right. Well, I enjoy people. I enjoy people that don't talk.
Yeah.
Much, I think
But you know, they've been. You know, they've always been upfront about things, and I've always been like that too. I tell people what goes on at the gathering. I'll tell you what I do. I'll tell you what happens there. I'm like pretty honest about it.
I was kind of surprised at how open both, you know, like Joe and Joey were and have been, and just everybody.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm sure there's a lot of things like, you know, that I could have written about this stuff that just wouldn't have made sense because the book was being written for, it has to interest non-juggalos as well.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I don't think the point of the book is like you should be a fan of this, right? I mean, it's not trying to win people over to their side of the culture or the music or anything.
No.
But certainly when it comes to the FBI stuff, it's kind of like, yeah, there's good guys and bad guys in this, okay? And this is who they are. And these are, you know, the actions on both sides. And
I think that
know.
Needed to be noted because, you know, I mean, just law enforcement, I mean, especially now we've got a lot of issues. But, I mean, these are important issues to sort out and we need to know how it operates.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. And I think that your book does have, you know, your opinion is in there.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, because some people would write that book and just try to be like,
you decide.
Let's not. Give you both sides of it. And
I tried to give both sides of it. Yeah. Although, I got to say, it still seems it's a very difficult argument from the side of law enforcement. And I sat down with the officer from Las Vegas, and he did his best. Bernard did his best to explain.
And I thought he did a great job. He was very cool and very forthcoming.
Mm-hmm.
And he said they should quit calling them juggalos.
You know? ICP should?
Quit calling them juggalos.
And that would prove what?
Yeah, then
that would solve what?
Then you don't have the gang connotation because, you know, juggalos are a gang, right? So now you don't have fans.
Oh,
that are a gang.
Okay.
That's his solution.
Well, then you don't have fans either. You know, if you go, well, you're not juggalos anymore.
That's a different issue.
Well, there's, you know, Star Trek fans, you know, they don't like to be called Trekkies.
They don't.
You know,
I didn't know that.
You didn't know that?
No. Are you a Trekkie?
I'm not a Trekkie.
That's
Star Wars. That's a whole different. Come on, Steve. Get with it, man. What the fuck?
No. I've never seen a Star Wars or a Star
Trek.
I have no idea.
Trekkies. Okay. I think because part of it was that was the name that was bestowed on them. I know this is okay. Well, this is another subculture. Okay. It all ties together.
All right. Okay. Are they
Trekkies? Trekkies don't like being called Trekkies because that was a name that people gave them. Like, if you were a fan of Star Trek, you were called a Trekkie. It was like a derogatory term.
If they dubbed themselves Trekkies.
Well, do you know what the name that they give themselves is? It's much better than Trekkies. It's Trekkers.
Jesus. Jesus, man.
But that's sort of their thing. Like, they don't want to be called some, you know. So, you know, I think with Juggalos, the name is like what they made that, you know, that's their name. They created it.
Right.
Or Joe created
okay,
it.
Okay, yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And so they wouldn't, you know. If it was something that someone put upon them,
yeah,
then that would never fly.
So, but really, you know, now, but though, for among some circles, like saying juggalos, that's defamatory.
Oh, absolutely! Yeah, like, look at that
derogatory.
Look at that juggalo over there, man. Or you know, you see some kid walking down
there.
They
were just juggalos.
Yeah,
some
juggalos over there.
Yeah,
yeah.
There was a friend of mine the other night. There's a show ICP played in Lance the other night. I guess it was about a month ago, and. First night they play, had two nights sold out. First night they play, the promoter puts plastic on the floor to keep the Faygo from leaking through the floorboards. Uh-huh. Well, what's the first thing that happens when you put plastic on the floor? It gets torn up.
Yeah, people
and
walk
so
in.
So they throw the Faygo leaks through to the place below.
Whoops.
Whoops. And they have to cancel the next night's show. And so they say you have to play without the Faygo the next night, and they say, well, we're not going to do that.
That's a no-go.
So they cancel it. But friends of mine are like, yeah, the juggalos ripped up the plastic on the floor. Again, somebody turned into their dad.
Well, somebody asked me about that, too, and it was like, well, you know, you can't be surprised when ICP shows up and starts throwing Faygo. You can't be in 2016 thinking that like this isn't going to happen.
Right.
You know what it's going to be.
Exactly.
You booked
you know what
them.
You're getting.
You know what you're getting. Like fucking, that's what it is.
You're buying talent. Your talent buyer should at least have gone to an ICP show before
and just go, this is it.
Somehow they thought if they just put plastic on the floor, everything
that they would be protected in that way. And I think ICP, you know, based upon what I know, they go out of their way to help the venues protect.
I think so.
Their monitors or whatever it is there. Like
to.
They
it's,
go
it's
like
in their
hey,
best
maybe
interest
do this,
to.
Yeah. Maybe you know? Do this, and it's like you know, it's like it's not like venues that are big, respected. You know, like the Fillmore in Detroit here, which is hosted Hollywood. You know, that's a Live Nation venue, and like they're you know that's as nice a concert venue as you're gonna
they
find.
They played
at
Masonic Auditorium.
Yeah. Well, see, I wasn't at that. How was that?
It was awesome, but that knocked me out walking in before the show, watching them wrap everything in plastic.
Yeah,
and I mean these beauty, you know, the beautiful
that
chandeliers
place is amazing,
and the plush seats, and I'm just astounded. They're like, they're gonna play here. There's gonna be stuff on everything here.
Yeah,
and it went off beautifully.
Yeah,
and, I don't know what the cleaning bill was.
I don't know either. But that was when I heard about that show, I was kind of like, well, that's odd for them to be in such a. I mean, not the Masonic. I mean, Masonic Temple needs money. We know that because what's gone on with them over the years. But yeah, what a great place.
Oh, great place! I think of all the shows I've seen there over the years, and
I told you my story about Jack White there, right? I've told that on the show. I got to tell them. I played there with. I've told you that story, right?
Oh, you did tell
with
me.
With Jeff Tweedy and the whole Jack
White
Theater.
That's right. They called you and they wanted you over there.
So well, I'll tell the story again for those of you that don't know
the
story. Because I went there and I was booked open for Jeff Tweedy because he likes comedians for some reason. And the guy who was putting the show together, I've done comedy for. He knows me. I got the call. I actually got the call to find somebody. And then I go, I'm fucking finding somebody. I'll do it, right? So I go and do it. And the show was going fine. And we're in the Jack White Theater, which I think was the first show under that name.
Yeah, it's a little tiny theater off the
it's
main
ballroom. Well, it's 1,500 seats. It's, yeah. It's small it's compared tiny. To the big one.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to put
yeah,
it.
Yeah, come on now,
he's
man.
Playing the small room.
Come on. I was playing, yeah. the, playing the small room, but the Jack White Theater, it's, you know, yeah. the first, I think the first event under that name.
Okay.
And I'm in there and I'm doing the show. And I said, it's great to be here at the Jack White Theater. It's a real honor. But one day soon, I hope to play at the Black Keys Theater, which is a larger, more popular theater. And they fucking booed me out of the building. That was the turning point in that show, man.
Dude.
That show went south after that. It's a great fucking
the
joke.
The fact that everybody got it.
People
also,
got it, and you know. You know, and look, I get why you're booing. It's kind of almost like a team sports thing. You know, I went there and insulted
right.
the home team
that's
in
right.
front of
you
them.
Did. That's true.
And, you know, gave it up for the other guys. But you know what? Fuck you. That's comedy.
Yeah.
If I wouldn't have done that joke, no one would have gave a shit. But I wouldn't have had respect for myself. I have to. You have to make the joke.
All right. Yeah.
You have to make the joke.
Right
you have to go there.
Plate.
You have to do it.
Yeah.
You have to
tee
it
up for you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Well, just a couple things else. Was there anything you learned in the book that was like amazing to you, or something that you liked, or something that shocked you that you didn't know, or anything that sort of stood out? Like, oh shit, that was.
No.
No? Well, come on.
I learned nothing.
You
no,
come.
No.
You...
I learned a ton of stuff, yeah. and it's all in the book. Everything I learned yeah. is like, you know, on page after page.
Yeah.
Because
for but, me, because I feel yeah, like I, reading it, you know, obviously compared to almost anyone else in the world, I knew so much of this that
right.
no one would, you know, know.
Right, yeah.
And I'm still learning stuff.
Sure, sure.
You know?
No, I mean, you know, at the by the time I finished it, I realized, you know, I was writing about entertainment, and I don't write about entertainment a lot.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I didn't the intersection of the feds and the First Amendment and entertainment. I think I hadn't really studied that before, and so I was kind of that interested me greatly.
Yeah.
And how seriously they take that the feds take it.
Yeah, because I don't know if someone's written that book, but that's a book right there, isn't it?
It is.
The files on Lenin and the files on MC5 and the files on all these people. Like,
yeah, but the fact that you realize why they picked on juggalos because they felt juggalos couldn't fight back.
Yeah,
and what a funny thing that all of a sudden they did fight back.
They did fight back.
Of the one of the group, probably a group they thought would never do that.
Yeah.
Ended up doing it.
Yeah.
I thought that's me.
That's amazing.
That was heroic.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a point where the woman representing the feds stood on the courthouse steps. We were talking, and I said, well, "What do you think? You know, what is your take on this lawsuit to begin with?" And she said, "Oh yeah, no, you know, it's good for the brand. You know, sticking it to the man." And I thought, well, I really didn't feel that was the motivation.
Well, they're not, you know, had that been the thing, they would have stood up earlier, wouldn't they? I mean, isn't that kind of part of the story, that this stuff was going on before
in four
they
states,
did even, anything,
states,
and they
right.
and I think they thought that like, hey, any press is good press, so even the bad press was good in the sense that it made them.
Yeah.
Thing, and then they realized how it was adversely affecting
their fans' lives and them being able to sell stuff and the whole thing.
Because I think ICP, through the whole thing, they were always able to, as much as it was affecting their fans, I don't know that they ever felt it because they were like, well, we're making money, so we'll come in and we'll pay, you know, we'll open our wallets and get this venue and we'll get it cleaned up. And, oh, you want extra security for this gathering?
Mm-hmm,
yeah, we'll throw money that way. And so it was never really coming down on them to where, oh, we can't go play this show. I mean, there were those things where, you know, they tried to do the gathering in this town and
sure.
they wouldn't let them.
Oh, yeah, you saw that. Yeah.
But ultimately, they've been able to do everything they've wanted to do, it seems like.
That's right.
And it just seemed like, well, maybe they looked around and said, well, we're not as popular. What's going on? Are we falling off for some reason other than just the normal fatigue maybe that people have of them?
Yeah, people wear out on artists.
Yeah.
You know, that's a long time.
Yeah.
But in this case, I think, you know, I truly believe that FBI, that FBI list was made sense for what they had to do.
I think so, too. And I think
any more than two live crew, you know, they had to, they were under siege, and they had to fight back.
Right.
And same with
But I think, I think at the end of the day, and you know, whatever that is, in however many years, maybe not now, I think that might be what they're remembered for.
That would
in
be,
their own way.
That would be awesome.
And that would be great.
I think
that would
be
the greatest victory. Because, you know, look, at this point, look, as big as they got 5 years ago, 6 years ago, with the mainstream and stuff, you're not going to do that. They, you know, that's not, you had that shot. You know, they had their thing in the 90s when they were genuinely big with record sales.
Mm-hmm.
Then they got a big again in the sort of cultish way.
Mm-hmm.
That's as big as it was ever going to be, in my opinion.
Hey, fame is fleeting, man.
Yeah, but this will live on. That's what I'm saying. This stuff will, when all of the SNL parodies and all of the people making fun of magnets, how do they work, and all that shit is sort of faded away.
Yeah.
There's going to be left with this FBI thing.
I think that's right. I think that's
and
true.
And they're going to be, you know, a blueprint maybe for other people that get attacked.
You have a precedent a precedent case, depending on how this goes. Now, you know, that'll be reheard by the court, and we'll see.
Well, it couldn't happen to nicer guys, let me tell you. By the way, I would have to put this in my own book. God forbid I ever write a book on ICP, but did you go to Joe's house?
No, I didn't. I didn't.
You did go to Joe's?
I did.
I don't think we went to the same house.
I did not.
You got to go to Joe's house. I've never seen a house like Joe's house. I've never seen it. I've probably described it before, but...
Come on.
Well, the living room was decorated completely in katana blades and ninja swords. And that was just one room of the house. I've never seen a house like this.
Oh, that's funny.
It was unbelievable. Because I think he's moved. He used to have a house in Farmington, kind of near the office.
Okay. All right.
Which now, did you go to Milford?
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't. You never went to his house?
No, I didn't go to his house. No. But he lives. Yeah, I know
his fucking house.
Yeah,
his fucking house is the greatest.
That's pretty funny.
It's the and I'm sure whatever the Milford house is, it is what it is. But boy, that other house, it's so great. It's just like, you know, okay, we're gonna like you just won the lottery and you're this white rapper that wears clown paint. How would you decorate your house? It's exactly what he did.
Oh, really?
It's like you're a guy who you know it has
perfect,
all man. Of the trappings of a guy. Who got an insurance settlement?
Okay, so
it's all the guy who made quick money for no good reason.
You know, it's cool though because it keeps in character. It's keeping in character.
It is. That's what's great
whereas
about him.
You or I, if I got that kind of, if I got big bunch of money, I'd probably live in a trailer.
Yeah, I don't know what, but it's. It's absolutely incredible. Yeah, it's something
that's
else.
Funny.
And for all of what you think, like the offices are Spartan and they're all this, the house, complete opposite. House is like living, but it's like living large. It's like living large at the mall. It's like I went into fucking, you know, you go to Brookstone and all the shit you wanted to buy that you went like, who the fuck's paying $800 for this fucking foot massager? Fucking Violent J is. That's who's doing it. It's the greatest thing. It's so amazing. It's all like, you know, you walk into Best Buy and you go, what idiot's got that ridiculous television in their living room? Fucking Violent J. It's the
beautiful.
you know, who buys that sofa with the fucking cup holders in it that fold out
right.
and stuff?
Yeah.
Violent J. It's just that's the, you know.
Oh, that's funny.
20-foot sectional. Who buys that? Violent, you know, a brown leather sectional that, yeah. It's
is there a
something
store
else?
That rappers, famous rappers and athletes, they shop at the same store,
they
right?
might. They might. Yeah. It's, it's just, it's something. It's just. It's. Yeah. I mean, good for him. I mean,
sure.
It's just like
sure,
it's
man.
Just you know,
it's
wrestling belts. Every
and while you're at it, go buy a Hummer.
Yeah, I mean, but actually, I think those guys are like I said, they're not like the big spenders. It's not Rolexes and you know Rolls Royces.
Yeah,
but it's like high end. Stuff you know, it's like high end.
The high end
stuff.
Mall.
It's
right.
it's like
mall
it's like
stuff.
The high end. Yeah, it's not. It's just it's something else, man. I gotta tell you. So you can go see that. All right, Steve. Well, let's talk one more time. Juggalo.
All right.
The book. It's out now.
So now
you see, I have the book.
I see.
You see,
right
I have it on the. I read on the Kindle.
You do.
So I bought it twice.
And so you bought a hard copy.
I bought a hard copy as well.
I think everybody should do that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think I like. Well, I my name's in it. How can I not have the fucking hard copy?
And it's what's cool though about
how else am I going to get
it on the Kindle? Of course, you can search that.
Yeah,
way,
I can
too.
Search it that way, but I can't. Yeah. You know, I can't walk into the bar with my fucking Kindle.
No, but you.
But
can.
Now I've got this right. book. Like, ladies, come here. Let me show you something.
Let me show you.
Let me show you the back here. You see that Fragmenti? Comma, you look right. Look, I'm going to show you.
It is weird how everybody does that.
You go to Flostradamus, and then you go down two, and it's Fort Bragg, and then it's Fragmenti, comma, Joel, followed by Freedom of Information Act. So, I mean,
sandwiched
you can't,
between
Fort Bragg and the Freedom of Information Act.
Beautiful.
I've completely made it. So this is it.
Yeah, man. No,
this is it.
Deservedly
sign
so.
That for
deservedly
me before
so.
You go to.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure.
I love that. I think you did a great job with it.
All right.
I think
well,
everyone should read it. It's an amazing story. And I feel like it's at least
it's a tale
little,
of a culture.
It's a little bit of my story, too. A little bit.
We try to put in a little bit of everybody's
yeah,
story.
It's great.
You know, you try to get touch
it's
on people, make these people real. You know,
it's tremendous, and I love it. Anything coming up we should know about? Is there anything?
Let's see. What am I doing right now? I'm writing a development for a crime show.
Okay.
And so that's had taken up some of my time lately. I'll go to the gathering this week, and then while I'm not there, I'll be in my hotel working on this stupid thing. And so that, and working on a proposal for a crime book about a mob hit and and some strippers and the world's most infamous strip joint in Las Vegas.
Okay, interesting. You ever cover Kwame?
No.
Is there anything? Has anyone written a Kwame book? Has anyone told that
story?
Yeah,
he did.
Well, anyone that, was going to tell the story either way.
I don't know. It'd be probably kind of interesting. I don't know if it has much appeal outside of
the
region.
But I wonder if you would even get people to go on the record. It seems like yeah?
Sure you would.
You don't think everyone's...
good reporter.
I mean, he's in jail, so I guess no one's afraid of him anymore.
No,
but sort of it seems like Detroit and its... that era in Detroit politics and stuff.
It might be. You're right.
Is like really interesting because it's sort of like you know the city elected a gangster.
That's right.
And they didn't know it.
But they did.
Yeah, but they did. Yeah, they it's.
I remember. You know, I remember living in D.C. Early in his administration, and everybody knew I was from Michigan.
Yeah.
I was working in Washington for a national paper, and they said, the mayor from Detroit's here. And he's going out every night tearing it up. And he's got more detail with him than we've ever seen in our life.
Yeah.
And he's really creating problems.
Wow.
And this is before anything came to light. And it was just, somebody from somebody got in my ear about it. And I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. I'm sure the press in Detroit has that under control.
Yeah. Not really, yeah.
I was kind of surprised.
Yeah, that was it was weird.
A couple more
people
years.
People sort of turned it was like people like I don't think they turned a blind eye to it, but or they also they sort of went like, hey, he's one of like at least the people in the city, and I don't try and be racist about it, but you know, people in the city looked at that and go, well, that's what you're supposed to do.
We elected him.
You know,
he's
that's the way you're supposed to lead.
Yeah, he's
and
rolling
do that,
in a different way.
You know?
Though. Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And then it was underneath, and then to other people were like, boy, he looks like he's, he's acting like he's some rapper or something.
Right.
And he was acting like...
I remember, he was the hip-hop mayor.
Yeah, he was like...
But he was doing... Remember, he was doing good things out of the gate, though, too. He was like really, getting stuff done.
Well, he did good things, but he also... Yeah.
But, well, we didn't... at the same time, he was doing really bad
things. Did really fucking bad shit.
Really bad things.
Yeah, I think that's a good story. If somebody ever wants to do
right. They should find... There should be a good Detroit writer doing it.
Yeah, good. Make a good movie.
Be also a good movie. That's right.
I mean, there's just so much with the city council and the girlfriends and the Strawberry. Who's Strawberry?
Yeah, and there's probably so much material in public record out there that that could write the book right there.
I mean, the text messages alone.
Text.
Come on, get on it.
Alone.
Look, I'm writing a book about being Upchuck the Clown. I'm busy. I can't do it. I'm writing a book. I'm writing
Upchuck.
Nothing. I'm writing
Upchuck.
Nothing.
You know, it's funny.
I have a Twitter I don't use.
Whenever I write books, people always say, well, I'm going to write a book someday.
Yeah,
I'm like, no, you're not.
Yeah, no, you're not. You're absolutely not.
It sucks to write a book.
Right.
It's terrible work.
Here's what I would do. If I thought this could happen, I'll write a book. If I said, okay, let me take some gathering stories, write a chapter of a book, give it to somebody, and then you're going to give me an advance, then that's fuck you. I'll do that.
Yeah.
But I know that's not...
It doesn't end there.
I know.
Once they give you the advance, you got to write a whole bunch
Then you got to write the whole book. But I feel like, boy, if you gave me some amount of money, I would want to write that. I think I know.
No, you'd be like,
life,
I got the money.
Life would get in the way.
I got half
of,
the money.
Yeah.
And then you start doing everything else, yeah. And you're like, God, this really sucks. This is really hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
But Corey's a writer, you know, the guy that usually sits here.
Yeah.
And he should talk to you.
Who's he write for?
Well, he was on staff at Metro Times. He was the movie guy, and he would write the occasional feature.
Okay.
I think he wrote a couple covers even for them and stuff. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, they let him go, or he left or something. Right. So now he's freelancing, and he's adrift a little bit, I think.
That happens.
Corey.
I mean, when you do this, you're always looking for the next story, and you're always like, you know, you got.
Yeah.
I write a lot for, like, the New Times publications.
Yeah.
And so on. And so, you know.
But do they give you the story, or is it.
No,
you're always coming up with the story.
I generally come to them.
Yeah.
Well, you don't want to write something somebody else is handing
you. Okay. No.
You want to do your own shit. Otherwise, you're going to get stuck with some crap.
Okay. No, so, that makes sense. That's good advice.
Yeah.
If you're a writer.
Always come up with your own stuff.
If you're Corey listening.
God.
He won't listen because he's not on the show.
Okay. He won't listen to episodes that he's not on.
I don't think he will.
Wow. I like
I don't know. I reviewed. The last show was a review of the Ghostbusters movie. And I wanted him to go. And I said, well, fuck it. It was kind of last minute. And I go, fucking, let's. I wasn't working at the comedy club. So I go, let's go to Ghostbusters, man. And we'll review it. And he goes, oh, I can't do it. I got to work at this. He's doing some other gig, you know, some non-writing gig that, you know, taking up a bunch of his time. And I go, all right. So I got this other. I got my friend John Tenney to go. We did a show. You know, we reviewed Ghostbusters. And then he goes, oh, fuck, man. I wanted to be on that. And I'm like, you got to get on it, man.
Snooze, you lose.
You got to come. I'm not going to fucking review Ghostbusters in 2 weeks and everybody knows what it is. I want to get it out the next day after I see it. You know, you got deadlines, right?
Yeah.
You can't
deadlines.
You know.
He would understand.
Well, you
that.
Would know the timeliness of certain things.
Right, yes.
I'm glad I'm having you. People can listen to this on the way to the gathering. Maybe.
Ah, maybe. That's a good idea.
And then people can come up to me and say, Joel, what a great interview.
Oh,
Steve
my
Miller.
God, that's right. And then they'll say, I read about you in the book.
Great. Will you please sign my book for me, Joel? Please do that. Sure.
I tried to tell people. I was telling people, I said, listen, I'll tell you what. People don't, juggalos don't want to, because people at DeCapo were like, well, you go down there and you sign your book, kind of sign autographs. I said, listen, people, juggalos don't want to talk to an author. I mean, believe me, that's not celebrity. What? Not that, and that doesn't, that's not, I don't mean to, you know, say that.
Juggalos won't read or something.
Right.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
not, that was not, yeah. But all I mean is, That's a pretty lame celebrity as author.
Yeah, you know?
I personally feel that way. I get I get emails saying, "Oh, I love this book or that book," and so on.
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Well, that's nice, but I don't get that many."
It doesn't. I don't think. I think if you
doesn't rock me.
If they gave you 2 hours in the autograph tent at the Gathering of the Juggalos, it'd be a long. It'd be a long 2 hours. A
one lonely ass place, man. I'm bringing a book.
Yeah, exactly. You'll be reading
not
a book.
One I wrote.
Yeah, signing a book. Bring your laptop and write your current
that's
book.
Right.
While you're waiting to
shit.
Sign copies of the new book.
Exactly, because I'd have plenty of time.
Well, hopefully people know who we are and they see you and they're going,
oh, that doesn't
matter. Steve Miller, man.
That's not what I'm in this for.
That guy gets it, man. He told our story. Like, I feel like you've told my story.
Yeah, that's it.
I feel like you've told a lot of stories of a lot of people.
Idea.
You know, the behind the scenes people of Joe and Joey themselves, the juggalos who've been harassed in this.
That's the idea.
You know, and the people who are fighting for the freedom, man.
Yeah, that's its own reward.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, when you do this, it's its own reward.
I think so. Well, Steve Miller, thanks so much, man. Another great talk.
Great to be here again.
Get the book.
As always.
Yeah, get the
thanks
book.
Thanks for turning down the AC.
Well, it's 73 in here.
That's still motherfucking cold. Damn, man. Once it gets under 80, it's a miserable
That's
time.
It for you?
Yeah,
okay. Sorry. All right. Well, I do what I can. I try to be a good host.
All right. Well, let's rock us out of here.
Yeah, let's go. Let's get the music on here. So pick it up on Amazon, Juggalo. It's great. You'll love it. It's about me. Why is it? If there's no other reason to buy it, I'm in it.
It's not about you.
It's not about me. It's not at all about me. You don't want to profile a comedian / podcaster / clown who is an amateur magician. No, you're not seeing any hooks there?
Not yet.
Let me tell you about my ex-girlfriends. We'll do that after the show. Maybe that'll get you involved. No?
Let's check the crime record. Let's see what you got.
Oh, I'm clean as a whistle. That's the thing.
Damn it.
That's the thing.
Sorry.
You can't pin anything down to me, man.
Sorry, man.
Sorry, cop.
The FBI doesn't want you for anything.
They don't want me for nothing. All right, Steve, thanks so much. Thanks for listening to Joel Radio. We'll see you at the gathering, right? We'll see you.
See ya.
All right. Good night.